This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. Now, this is the place where government actions meet business decisions, online at www.bgov.com and on the air on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30. Now, at some point in your life, you've gotten an email or maybe a link to a website, legitimate, both email and link, that is, for someone whom you may know asking you for money to start up a project or maybe record an album, who knows, maybe even purchase a car. Well, that's a form of crowdfunding, and there are rules that govern its use. With that in mind, the SEC is now moving toward unleashing billions in potential dollars of capital for startups. But is that the real story? Find out from Bloomberg government analyst Afzal Bari and Katie North. But we'll kick off the program with cybersecurity. Mandiant is an organization that the Chinese government will guarantee you, they will guarantee you, they are the right arm of the NSA. Not true. They are, however, an organization that'll mitigate, track, and remove security issues on your network and prevent that issue from happening again, or at least attempt to. Security breaches are inevitable. What you do with them after that is their specialty, and the man behind it is their chief security officer, Richard Betlich, who joins me now.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So lots of things scare me on a regular basis, but I just heard you speak a little while ago, and I have a feeling I won't sleep for the next couple of nights, weeks, months, maybe even years. I'm not sure. Richard from Mandiant gave us a talk about cybersecurity and espionage and stuff that what scares you? I mean, you talked about this stuff like it was no big deal. Like, you know, it's another day at the office. What scares you with regard to cybersecurity? What keeps you up at night?
Security is something that we just have to think differently about. It's not something you think in terms of we have to stop all the bad guys from ever getting into your company. You just need to find them when they do get in and then kick them out as quickly as possible. But in terms of attacks that could succeed, I do worry about intruders who either don't care about the consequences of their actions, don't think them through, or they are clearly there to cause you harm. And typically those are not going to be found at the nation state level. They're often independent groups, or potentially it could be what you might consider more of a rogue nation like a North Korea or an Iran. So those are the sorts of things I tend to worry about.
Let's talk about Congress. Congress has not managed to pass a lot in the past couple of years. Cybersecurity Act, ended up in a presidential resolution.
Executive order.
Thank you. Yeah. Why was that lost on me? I don't get it. Thank you for filling in the blank. It's voluntary. Go ahead. You do what you want to do. You're good here. Whereas in the European Union, everything is more regulated. Is California the body that we should be following at this point? And why California?
Well, there's different sorts of sources of regulation. We've had a wave of activity over the last decade that's been focused on protecting consumers, and rightly so, I think. Anytime you worry about civil liberties, personally identifiable information, that's what we've seen. If you lose that information, you have to tell somebody. Unfortunately, it's not a federal statute. It's a state-by-state affair, so that these companies have to spend a lot of time and effort figuring out how to be compliant with 47 different state statutes. So I think there is some room to have maybe a single breach statute that tells companies what to do if they lose individuals' information, but that's different from company information or even from other types of information that might be lost. And that's where there's still a lot of debate about what should be done.
You had an interesting quote. All the walls in the world aren't going to stop, guys. It's going to happen. It's a matter of, and you mentioned it just a minute ago, how quickly you can detect it and remove them. It's the rogue people that could be wreaking havoc in the world, whether it be water, power grid. I'm deathly afraid of the power grid going down now. Thank you very much, Richard. I appreciate that. Longer than it did during any natural disaster whatsoever. I have a feeling I'm going to start hoarding at this point. Thank you again, Richard.
Well, so I actually don't worry about that quite so much because I think it might be possible to cause intermittent problems. The ability to cause a widespread outage for a long period of time is better left to Mother Nature. I mean, that's who has the power to cause this sort of damage. So I don't worry about that quite so much. I think that there are people in positions of power who worry about it because it's their worst nightmare.
Sure.
You know, we'll have to call in the National Guard, and how do we feed people and keep them warm and all that sort of thing. But honestly, I think I would focus almost more on just the natural disaster aspect and worry less about the digital aspect.
In China at this point, it's almost a regular job. I read an article in the Los Angeles Times recently telling the story of a young man who, you know, lives in his basement. He works for the military, lives with his mom, eating ramen noodles, the whole deal. And this is pretty typical of a military guy working over there hacking all day long. And he works for the military hacking all day long.
Yeah.
Does it scare you more having the military behind this espionage that's going on? Does that scare you more than just that rogue person in North Korea or Russia, let's say, who it may be doing it more than just stealing data?
There are bad aspects and there are good aspects. The bad aspects are you have a unit that is funded, trained, focused. They have a mission. They have the power of the state behind them, something that's very difficult for a private organization to defend themselves against. On the good side, they tend to be more disciplined. They have rules that they tend to follow. They could get reprimanded if they operate outside those rules and try to destroy something. So there's almost a level of stability associated with a state-sponsored actor who is doing espionage. Now, if you have a state-sponsored actor who's there to destroy, then all bets are off and you're looking at more worrisome situation.
Are those state-sponsored actors now following the unspoken rules in China specifically? Are they now getting more than they should? Or have explicitly said they won't take more than X, Y, or Z, and now they're overstepping their bounds?
We have seen some limited examples that have been reported elsewhere that are very interesting, where the groups that have been focused on espionage have turned to other areas. There have been reports that there are labor camps in China where during the day you're a laborer, and at night you're mining e-gold to break into gaming forums. Or to exploit gaming forums. And there's some evidence
that sounds like a fun life.
Honestly.
I mean, come on, really?
So apparently some of these military units have said, well, you know, during the day we'll hack for the party, and at night we'll try to make some money on the side. And that's a little ridiculous.
Are attacks, because every day you turn on the TV, most recently banks hacked a little while ago, those little Visa debit cards or whatever, limits were raised, PIN numbers were distributed, and in a matter of hours, millions of dollars disappears.
Right.
Are these attacks becoming more prevalent? Are they getting smarter? Or are we just paying closer attention at this point?
Well, money is tracked very closely. So you're not going to have something like that happen and nobody notice. Those attacks are interesting from the perspective that you can't pull that off if you're a kid in a basement. I don't care if you have 100 kids in 100 basements, you can't pull that off. You need somebody who knows how the financial system works, where to go to pull the limits off, someone to organize all the mules to take the data out of the system, what to do with the money once you get it. That type of activity is very, very impressive.
And virtually unstoppable at this point.
Well, it's... As we talked earlier, it's almost got the elements of a disaster. If at any point in that chain and some people call this a kill chain, if at any point in that chain you had disrupted their activity, so at the point where they were in the payment processor, you found them as they were removing limits off of the cards, and you had stopped them there, then the mules couldn't have taken the money, the whole thing collapses. So it is possible, I think, to stop these guys, but if you're trying to stop it at the very end, perhaps when they're taking the money out of the ATM, that's probably too late.
You really don't pay a whole lot of attention. I take that back. I pay a lot of attention to hacks. Last year, I did a top 10 hacks of 2012, talking about Amazon, PayPal, various organizations that have had their data compromised in one way or another. Social Security numbers getting distributed. You know, there's one guy out there who says, he's put his Social Security number on trucks, saying, go ahead, steal it. I've got LifeLock. I've got my life protected. I'm not even concerned. Not a smart move, number one.
No,
number two, you hear about these hacks on TV and various forms of espionage and criminal activity being done online. It doesn't really hit home until it happens to you. And it happened here at Federal News Radio and WTOP. Both websites compromised. Mandiant was called in to help us figure out what happened and how to prevent it from happening. What did you glean from that information that you were able to pull out?
Well, it's clear that you were the sort of target that a certain type of actor wants to hit because you have interesting and influential people visiting your website. The old mode of attack has been to send out phishing emails, and people are getting wise to phishing emails. I'm not going to click that attachment. I'm not going to follow that link. But if I visit your website, like I might do on a daily basis, and my web browser is not patched, suddenly I have a problem, and I never would have crossed my mind that that would have happened. So that's been a new, a popular form of exploitation for the last few years now.
One of the things that, one of the methods of remediation that WTOP and Federal News Radio took was to not allow Internet Explorer users to access the site any longer. Firefox was good, Safari was good, Chrome was good. What is it about IE that makes it inferior to those other browsers that I mentioned?
I wouldn't necessarily call it inferior, but what you run into is it's more likely if you're using IE that you're using an old system that you have not updated. Mm-hmm. For example, there are many corporations that still default to IE6 that was shipped with older versions of Windows. And IE6 is not a defensible platform. Modern versions of IE, no problem. They're as good as Firefox or any of these others. So I think there was a risk decision there that said, if you're using IE, there's a chance you're using one of these very old versions, whereas if you're using something newer that has more auto-updating built into it, let's go ahead and let you visit the site.
All right, so for listeners of Federal News Radio right now, I want you to pull out a pen and piece of paper because we're going to quiz Richard on the technology that he uses currently because that's probably the stuff you want to get. Because Richard's a smart guy. And Richard, I'm guessing you haven't been the victim of a hack, or have you?
I've had the sorts of theft of credit cards that many people have had repeatedly over the years. And I've also had data. I was part of the Veterans Affairs breach years ago.
Yeah.
I think the state of Virginia had some issues. So as a resident, I've been affected by many of those same issues.
So computer that you're using, and these are not by any way endorsements. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that you may not own stock in these companies.
Right.
So the computer that you use, I'm taking notes here. What's your browser of choice?
So this is interesting because it could potentially be a roadmap for someone to attack me.
All right, then we won't go that way. How's that?
Well, what I'll say is that I do use different browsers and different operating systems depending on what I'm doing. So if I'm doing research, I will not use Windows. I will use something like Linux. I have different browsers for different activity. If I'm checking my bank, I'll do one computer, one operating system, one browser. If I'm doing security work, I use something different.
Is that something that you would recommend for others?
If I were a small business owner and the account that I have has my entire company's savings in it, and if I were to lose that money, my company would go out of business, I think it would be worth the time and minor resources to get a separate computer that you only use to log into that bank account that you use to run payroll and all that. Don't check your email on it. Don't browse the web on it. Just use it to interface with your bank. It's a small price to pay that can buy you a lot of peace of mind, I think, in terms, because that's one of the things we didn't talk about it just recently, but one of the things we see are these small companies who get hit with a, you know, $400,000-$600,000 drain from their bank account that they don't have, that there's no insurance in that sort of thing. It's not like it's FDIC insured or anything like that. So yeah, for a small company, that's not a bad idea. Just, you know, computers are cheap. Spend a couple hundred dollars. This is going to be the company's banking computer, and that's all we do on it.
My wife is going to love you because I'm about to go out and spend a lot of money now. I'm going to buy another computer just to do my own personal online banking, and I guess a lot of you do the same. We do have a lot of government contractors that listen, people who own their own companies as well. So there you go. Key advice. Do yourself a favor and go pick up another PC and just use that one. Or maybe Mac. Use that one.
Absolutely.
For your online banking. Richard, what kind of tips would you pass along to someone out there who's maybe thinking about starting up a business of some sort and they want to make sure that they're going to open up at least safely from the get-go?
Boy, if you're starting a business, I think in terms of what information you have and where it goes and what would happen to it if a bad guy got access to it. So for example, I use email like everybody else, but I don't put the most sensitive data I could possibly think of in that email. You're not gonna see me emailing my tax returns to someone, putting my social security number in an email. I think I'm actually a former Air Force guy, but I think in terms of almost a submarine commander. If this part of the sub gets breached, does the whole thing go down? Or do I have a wall that will keep enough water out of the rest of the sub so that it doesn't go down. I would always think in those terms. Is there some part of your business or some piece of data that if you lose control of that, you lose everything? If that is, you've just identified something that's too critical to fail, and you need to start changing the way you do business.
Words of advice. Richard, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation.
This is Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And there's an interesting twist to crowdfunding that could put a lot of money on the table upon the approval of another Jobs Act in 2014. Here to explain are BGov analysts Afzal Bari and Katie North. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, he says. So that's kind of a watered-down version of your latest analysis, crowdfunding rules. Before we dive into that, let's take a step back. Katie, explain crowdfunding for those who I know are listening to the radio right now going, I probably should know this, but I don't, and I'm too scared to ask.
Well, it's a good question. It's actually, the concept is about utilizing the internet and, you know, basically sites that bring people together who are interested in a common topic or issue. And in this case, taking a look at raising funds through by harnessing the power of the internet and, you know, groups of people who could tune in such a way. And so what we're talking about doing with these SEC rules is creating an opportunity to actually gain an equity stake in a company as a result of going on the internet and basically saying, oh, that looks like a great idea. I'd like to invest in that.
Right. So there are lots of different ways it can be done. After all, I've seen them. You've gotten the emails, I'm sure, from your friend who has a band and they're trying to record an album and they're saying, if you guys just give me some money, I can, you know, crash, I could get a producer, I could crash out in LA for a week or so and I could record the album. And in exchange, these are the services I'll provide you, that kind of thing. That's the reward and prepayment type of crowdfunding. There are others, however.
Yeah, sure. So that's one model, and that's Kickstarter and Indiegogo are two examples of platforms where you can go out and do that type of crowdfunding. That's actually not really what we're talking about when it comes to the SEC. So that's setting the stage because that's been wildly successful over the past few years.
Sure.
What the SEC is looking at is, and this is what Congress has told them to look at and told them to write rules for, is actually being able to do that, but invest in a company. So instead of just getting some sort of product, some sort of service in return, you can actually get an equity stake in a company, or you can get a dividend stream, or you can get a piece of a loan. So some sort of actual cash back, as opposed to just, you know, helping out your friend record an album.
So, well, exactly. But this has got to be a regulatory person's nightmare to figure out how to make this possible. Currently, you can only invest in, you have to be a trader, someone who is certified and bonded and insured, like on the back of the truck, to be able to buy and sell and trade stock or equity in a company. Katie, how are we going to get around this? How difficult will it be to rewrite the rules?
Yeah, so currently, accredited investors, high net worth individuals can do this type of crowdfunding where there's certain, you know, companies that maybe have a private equity offering and there's a new company they want to have a seed money for. Mm-hmm. So that's able, you know, the SEC has allowed that. That's been in existence for a long time. So we're talking about expanding that to a much larger group of people. Thousands and thousands of people potentially could do that who are maybe not as sophisticated investors as accredited investors. So the challenge we have is to see what sorts of protections the SEC will put into place. And the Jobs Act itself did write several of these protections into law, but the SEC is working on taking a look at maybe some additional ones as well.
Going through 2014 is when that Jobs Act will eventually pass, we're guessing, or when those regulations will go into play. There's a quote of billions of dollars becoming available. Is that an overstatement, understatement? Is that something that we should consider, hey, wow, maybe I'll come up with an idea and I could get crowdfunded if it's good enough?
So there are two things. One is so the Jobs Act actually passed already. The SEC's writing rules.
Understood.
And that's really what's going to be coming out in 2014. But as far as the scope, to be honest, nobody really knows yet, right? So right now there's all this money sitting on the sidelines potentially that could go towards crowdfunding. Billions is probably not an unreasonable estimate, but at the same time, we don't know yet because the SEC hasn't written rules and because we don't know how the ecosystem will actually evolve.
There have got to be financial institutions or organizations that oversee not necessarily the SEC, but there are other organizations involved here. I've dubbed one of them NASA, the additional A. Katie, what is their vision? And NASA, of course, is North American Securities Administrators Association. What is their stake in this?
Yeah, so like state securities administrators and people like the CFA Institute are pretty cautious on this concept because it does open the door to a lot of fraud potential. Right. And certainly anytime you're looking at equity markets, there's going to be fraud. There's going to be attempts at fraud. And what the regulators can do is put into place rules that help prevent or mitigate some of that, those concerns. And so I think what those groups are really focused on is ensuring that there is some protection put into place. And so that's where their stake lies. But when you come to like the BC folks and people who are in the crowdfunding space who maybe represent the platforms, represent the potential opportunities for all of these companies, they're very excited about this opportunity and they want to see it go forward. They too want to see some protections in place, but they're very much more interested in making sure there's an actual system that gets on the ground and starts, not as focused necessarily on those fraud protection efforts.
That kind of leads me to the idea of transparency. What about Dodd-Frank? Where does this play in this, or does it at all?
So Dodd-Frank didn't really deal with a lot of these capital formation issues that the Jobs Act dealt with, mm-hmm. but it does play in terms of the SEC's rulemaking load and their sort of workload on a lot of this. They're having to really balance these two priorities, Dodd-Frank, which is huge, and Jobs Act, which is smaller, but it all falls on the SEC. And so that's really one of the reasons why we haven't seen all the rules come out that should have on Jobs Act, in particular with crowdfunding. And that's one of the major criticisms that we've seen from stakeholders is that nothing's happened yet, and they're frustrated. We don't even have a proposed rule on the table. So Dodd-Frank does come into play in that respect.
It takes a while for those proposed rules to even make it through the process, so to speak. Afzal, will this, here I am making you put on your prognosticator's hat, will this happen?
So there's some in the industry, especially in the crowdfunding industry, who are worried that the SEC is actually looking to kill this, is looking to overregulate this, and is dragging their feet on this. Right now, so far, from the people that we've talked to, from the indications that we've seen, that doesn't seem to be the case. It seems like the SEC really is just delayed because they have a lot to do,
right.
And because this is a tough issue. So I do think that we'll see crowdfunding rules come out later this year, and potentially implemented either later this year, but more likely early next year.
All right. Well, in the meantime, we have a lot of work to do because we have to come up with an idea for a company. We're going to get funded. Me, Katie, and Afzal going into business together, right? What do you want to sell? Any ideas? No? Exercise equipment?
Some sort of teleport machine, I think, would be a good idea.
Ooh. Time travel.
Flying cars.
Yeah.
Teleport machine, time travel, and flying cars. We got it. We're on it. Crowdfunding. The rules are getting written, so to speak. Billions of potential in capital. Katie Afzal, bgov.com. Look for their analysis out there. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
And with that, we put the wraps on another edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. I want to thank Richard Betlich of Mandiant for joining me today talking cybersecurity. To find out more, check out Mandiant.com. Follow us on Twitter at BGov or follow me at Alan L. Scott for show updates and, of course, random bits of nothingness. BGov has a TV show. It's called Capital Gains, Sundays at 11:30, immediately following Face the Nation. It's hosted by Bloomberg's own Peter Cook. We'll be back next Thursday at 11 with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.